listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, we got CarCast coming up, and we're definitely going to deep dive into to the Bronco Sport, the full size Bronco, and we're going to touch a little bit on the Jeep Wrangler with the V8 engine, with the Hemi engine in it. Before we get started, a word from our friends at Meguiar's. You know, car waxes have come a long way, and last year, Meguiar's introduced their hybrid ceramic spray wax. It's their advanced SiO2 hybrid technology. It delivers ceramic wax protection and durability. There's no rubbing, curing, or buffing needed. It provides extreme water beating action. It's fantastic. And this year, Meguiar's launched their liquid version. It seals the paint for long-lasting protection against the elements. It's easy to use and apply like a traditional liquid wax. Furthermore, they've also come out with their hybrid ceramic spray detailer. This is great in between the real full version. It removes contaminants like dust, fingerprints, bird droppings, and boosts gloss and enhances protection. It's a ceramic, the hybrid ceramic spray detailer. It's ceramic made easy. It's from Meguiar's, and it's available at pretty much all auto parts stores. Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt the Motorator DeAndrea here with Bill Goldberg, and we're going to have a good show for you today. And of course, we're going to be talking about Bronco. It's going to be something that we're going to have to talk about. You can hear Alistair Weaver's going to be with us.
I didn't know you had kids.
He's got the one kid. And so today's guests are Alistair Weaver. Alistair Weaver and his little daughter are our guests today.
it's Alistair Weaver. He's 1 year old, and the builder's outside the window, I think, as well. So welcome to COVID land in Southern California.
COVID land in Texas is I'm upstairs and Gage's video game room because of the landscapers downstairs and my son running throughout the house.
Oh, I was going to say yes. You finally gave in to the heat and you had to come inside
yes and no, but it's 105. I could succumb to it, but that's not the reason why I'm inside right now.
All right, before we get started, a reminder from our friends at Dodge. It's time for Dodge Power Dollars. That means for each horsepower, you get $10 off your purchase on a Dodge Charger, Challenger, or Durango. So come in for Dodge Power Dollars today and get a pretty sweet deal. All right, so of course, the whole world seems to be buzzing, at least in America, about the new Ford Bronco, the new Ford Broncos. We've got three models in unlimited configurations. We're going to have to talk about this. I will say, first of all, kudos to Ford for a very well done launch and a product that seems to be really resonating with people. I think it looks pretty good. I think the options are cool. I think we're going to run into one or two items that we're going to nitpick that we don't like. But the general consensus is, hey, man, this is fun, and it's going to be pretty cool, and it's going to be it's going to be the most modified vehicle at SEMA, if not this year, the next year, and for good reason, right? So let's get into it a little bit. Alistair, you guys have had a chance to, have you been in the vehicle or seen it, or people on your team have seen it, filmed with it? What have you guys done? You guys get a little bit ahead of the rest of us in this on this type of stuff.
Yeah, thanks, mate. We actually went out to Detroit and managed to get to Detroit and to spend some time physically with the vehicle. We put a film live on Monday, which is just gone on the when the launch broke. We basically went live with our content, and it's been insane. We were trending number three on YouTube, and that's not number three on YouTube for automotive. That's everything. Kim Kardashian, WWE, whatever you like, number three on YouTube. We did 500,000 views in a day.
Wow, fantastic!
So obviously great for us, but other people are doing well as well. There's just so much interest. I mean, I think the only thing that I can compare it with is maybe C8 Corvette got a lot of initial interest. But even that, I think because it's a more of a specialist sort of supercar, this the Bronco's gone mad. It's I can't think of another vehicle that has created this much attention in such a short space of time.
So the where I got jammed up a little bit as far as information, and there's a lot out there, was they did a big online presentation last week, last Wednesday, just prior to me coming in the studio here. And they only got about halfway through Bronco two-door and four-door. And it was an hour long before I had to stop and come in here and do the show. So I missed part of their presentation and all of the Bronco Sport presentation. Now, of course, we've gotten a lot of information since then and the embargoed press releases and photos and all that stuff. But there's definitely some things that I'm sure are out there that that I don't know yet, or some things that you guys know. But just to back up a little bit, let's just do a quick overview of what it is. Ford's Bronco, they are offering a two-door and a four-door Bronco, which are essentially, I don't know what we're calling them, full-size Broncos. It's a chassis, a body-on-chassis Bronco. And then the Bronco Sport is only a four-door, and it's sort of an off-road version of the Ford Escape, if you will. It's built on the small unibody chassis, I think, which looks significantly better than a Ford Escape. I think it's really going to hurt Ford Escape sales. But the reason why we have three variations of this is Ford is continuing with this strategy of sub-brands and building more within that sub-brand. They want Mustang to be a brand with, you know, EcoBoost and GT500 and Mach-E and Mach 1. And so they're going to have a bunch there within that umbrella of Mustang. And Bronco, essentially, is what they want to do as well. So we have two-door, we have four-door, and Bronco Sport, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So let's start with Bronco, the two-door and the four-door, because that's where all of the buzz is right now. I'd be curious to see where the reservations are going. They opened up reservations, $100 to get your name on the list for the vehicles. How many two-doors versus four-doors versus Sport are being sold, and what are Ford's predictions on those? That would be interesting. I don't know if you have any insight into that type of stuff, but I don't know. I mean, the two-door looks so good. Is it going to be practical, or is everyone going to buy the four-door? I guess one of my questions for you, Alistair, would be, in the world of Jeep, how many four-door Jeeps do they sell versus two-door Jeeps? You know?
Do you know what? I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm thinking it's now weighted towards the four-door. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that classic thing. You look at the two-door and say, that looks really cool. And, you know, if that was my toy car for a weekend, I'd have the two-door. But actually, if I'm going to use this thing and I've got a family or I want a bit of extra space, you might as well get the four-door. And certainly in the case of the Jeep, it doesn't really make that much difference off-road. And I think it would be the same with the Bronco. It was interesting with the reservations. I actually threw my $100 into the ring and strategically went for the first edition because I figured it would be first. But what they're allowing you to do down the line is actually to swap about what you're actually ordering. So it was all about just getting your name down and taking it from there.
Bill, what are your initial thoughts, what you've seen so far?
I think they've done a tremendous job. You say it looks pretty good. I think it looks fantastic, both inside and out. And it's interesting what Ford, you know, we've had some slightly mundane mainstream products from Ford, like the Explorer, but their sort of brand strategy stuff, like the electric Mustang, Mach-E, and the, and then the, And then these Broncos look terrific. They've really given the designers the head. They seem, not only is it designed well, there's lots of clever tech designed for the market. So, you know, we're really excited about it. And, you know, obviously it's a big rival to the Wrangler, which we also enjoy. And the other one that I would be, if I was Land Rover right now, looking at the Defender, which is going to be more expensive, this is a pretty big shot across the bows of the defender as well.
Do you think so, really, because people want a defender to be a more stripped down utilitarian vehicle? I mean, the Land Rover brand is higher end. They've definitely made themselves up market. Like, even now, the full size Range Rover, what's the spread on that thing? Like, I don't know, 80,000 on the low end and over 200,000 for the autobiography for the SV. Like, you could, that's a pretty big spread on one type of vehicle, right?
Yeah, I mean, Defender's going to start about 50, so it's going to be above Bronco. But I mean, the Bronco, like the first edition, is $60,000+. I think a lot of Broncos will be changing hands for $50,000 plus, because I think, you know, people will. It's going to be that kind of vehicle that you want the toys, that people say, I want a bit of this, I want a bit of that, and I want the, you know, the fancy discs and the fancy shocks. And yeah, from what we've seen, and we spent some time with the vehicle. We haven't driven it yet. Nobody has. But assuming that it drives as well as it looks, and that they, you know, they've had the Jeep to benchmark, so it would be odd if it didn't drive at least as well, but be better than the Wrangler. Then I think they've got a big hit on their hands.
Bill, what are your initial thoughts on it? Because I know it caught your attention as well.
Oh man! Oh, here we go. Okay, nice setup. Well, you know, as the preeminent Dodge guy, I have to say, as a personal case study, I have to be really careful when I walk this line. I was enthralled with the way they presented it.
Yeah.
As a guy who's, you know, I've got one of the most famous one of the most famous Fords in the world. I work for Dodge.
That's right. The law.
But I have cars of all different manufacturers, right? I am a car guy true and true. And when there's something put out there by any manufacturer that catches my attention, you know, I give it some weight, right? Well, man, you know, was I the only one that didn't hear sound on the presentation, first of all?
I don't know. I did see the embargoed presentation that I saw. The sound did work, but there are some videos that they put out that's just B-roll for companies to edit in, which does not have sound. So
gotcha. Well,
maybe you saw some of that.
The case study in real time was that I went on the live announcement, you know, on YouTube on mm-hmm. Ford's channel. And didn't get any sound on that. And then it looked like it crashed once or twice, maybe because I live in the middle of nowhere. But that led me to take the time to be advantageous to go to their site and to get one of the reservations, right? Whether I'm a Dodge guy or not, I mean, like I said, a cool vehicle is the cool vehicle. So what's $100? You put your name down, and then, you know, 4 months later, you customize the vehicle any way you want, and then it's fully refundable. I basically took part in it as a case study to see how Ford was doing it, especially during these coronavirus times. And we've talked about that in past episodes. And I got to say, I was highly impressed on how they did. I really was. I still truly believe that if it's done on network television in conjunction with on the internet, it's much better in that, you know, you don't have much chance of it crashing on network television. Although, yes, it's going to be more expensive, but you're going to hit many more people. But I was just curious as to the way that I couldn't pass judgment on something unless I was fully knowledgeable and I wanted to take part in the entire situation. And I got sucked in. So I think they did a great job. It's a good looking vehicle with unlimited ability to customize it the way the consumer wants. So, you know, I think that's an unbelievable way to advertise the vehicle.
Well,
it was kind of, sorry, Matt.
I was, go ahead and then I'll jump in, but sure.
No, I was just saying it was really interesting how Ford handled it as well, because now we're moving to a world, you know, where we ordered it online, you put your $100. Within like half an hour, I'd had an email, like a generic email from the local dealer. I then had a personalized email from the local dealer. Then yesterday, and you'll enjoy this, Matt. Yesterday, I got a call from Dale at South Bay Ford in Manhattan Beach, where I live. And they And he called me up, talked about the order, said, well, we're going to be a few months away. And then completely unprompted said, we are not going to try and charge you a markup on this vehicle.
Oh my God.
And I was like,
that's the best
news ever. I got the same phone call within 5 seconds of me clicking, you know, the order button.
Yeah.
I got the email immediately. And then, you know, just a little footnote, you can only reserve two of them per person. And the first editions are already sold out.
Now, did they tell you?
I got a first edition.
Like I said.
Did Bill, did anybody, when you spoke to anybody, did they say anything about pricing or markup?
No. I didn't speak to them. You know me. I'm not going to return the phone call until it's time to order the car. But the fact is that, you know, they followed up immediately.
Yeah.
It was an immediate, a domino effect.
I think Ford did a great job with the launch, and it's getting a lot of buzz. And I think the single greatest way to flub this whole thing is
to have the vehicle suck.
For dealers to just do the markups. I mean, it's 30, 40, 50, $60,000 vehicles, depending on the options. If they're going to start throwing $10,000, $20,000 markups on them, it's going to put a damper on all of those pre-sales for sure. And Ford wants to sell these things, so there's not going to be a shortage of them. And guys, you know how I feel about markup. I mean, look at the Toyota Supra. That thing came out. It was great. People were paying $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 over sticker. And then in the second year, they gave it basically a 50 horsepower bump. So you guys just paid a bunch of extra money for a car that's nowhere near as good as the second gen. As the second, not even second gen, the second year. So I don't know. So not to harp on that too much, but I like the sort of two school of thoughts that we have going on here between you two guys, Alistair and Bill. Alistair, you ordered one, which I assume is as fully loaded as you can possibly get it or close to it. Whereas Bill, we were talking before and you were saying you were more interested in a stripped down version of it because you want to do your own thing. You're more of the SEMA build type of guy where, you know, Alistair, what you're testing, I guess, makes more sense. Like, what does it come with off-road shocks? Does it come with, you know, what features are available,
My situation and my desires and the usefulness of the vehicle is a completely different story than Alistair. Mm-hmm. I buy vehicles so that I can personalize them to my liking and make them as far away from the norm as humanly possible. And it seems as if you're not missing anything by purchasing a base model, you know, i.e. look at the off-road ability that you're able to selectorize on that, the Sasquatch package. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and go into it because I don't know the exact details, but it seems like the bitch and off-road checkbox you have to hit, and it's available on the base model. It comes on the first edition, but it's available as an option on the base model. So, completely different ways of thinking. You know, given all the amount of money in the world, you know, and spending frivolously, I would have grabbed the first edition, first of all, and put it away and sold it, you know, 30 years down the road. But, I want something for function right now, and if the toy is going to be as cool as it's professed, then I think it's a must have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be honest. I was being strategic because I reckon that the first edition might be first.
Absolutely.
And professionally, I kind of wanted to get into it as quickly. I mean, we'll drive the press cars, we'll do the launch and everything else, but I thought it'd be great to own one of these things. We own a Wrangler. We've just done 50,000 miles in a Wrangler. We just did a film about what it's like to live with for that time. And that's a key part of what we do. So I think if it was me, I always like play the spec game to see. It's almost as much fun as like doing Porsche's configurator. So I would probably have had a Badlands, which is like the extreme off-roader, but not the sort of one for the desert. So that's probably what I would have been choosing. But the first edition was just a strategic choice because I figured we'd get it first.
There's different modes of operation, no question. I mean, I thought that at the same time. But, you know, when you can get something, obviously the cheapest base model possible and have all the options available to it to build it up like these others, then, you know, you can pick and choose. And it's like building a Lego, like we talked earlier. And so it's really cool to be able to personalize it to the way that they've been able to do it.
Do you know what I love about that base model as well? Not only is it a good price, but it's got steely wheels.
Yeah, I saw that too.
What I don't like is that the two power plants that are offered, the 2.7 doesn't come with the 7-speed manual.
Yeah, so
it's not an option. So.
I want to get into that. I want to start getting into some of the specs about the engine and transmission options, and then we'll dig into some of the other features. We do know that.
But let me be clear before anything moves any further. The TRX is going to absolutely destroy this vehicle when it comes out. So this is just to bide my time until Dodge releases this damn truck in a couple months. So don't think by any stretch of the imagination that Ford swayed me in any way. I just like cool little toys. And yeah, that's what it is compared to everything that Dodge puts out. So I just wanted to set the record straight before it went any further.
I did enjoy Ford. I did enjoy Jeep kind of quietly slipping. Well, not quietly, making a big player slipping out of V8 Wrangler the day before Bronco goes live. I don't think they quite achieved what they were hoping to do and steal the limelight, but it was kind of fun. I enjoy that sort of thing.
Now, and if we have time at the end of this, I want to talk a little bit about the V8 Wrangler. But before we get into the specs, let me just hit our friends at Geico. So right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? Your dog to make breakfast in bed? Well, that's not going to happen, but saving money can. There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. All right, so what are the engine options for the full size and the sport and the transmission options? Do we have some of that information, Alistair?
Yeah, we do. I'm just pulling it up, Matt, just so I don't make any mistakes with this. So you start off with the 2.3-litre EcoBoost, which has the 7-speed manual or the 10-speed auto. And then as an option, you go to the 2.7-litre EcoBoost, which is only available with a 10-speed auto. To be honest, we're seeing this a lot at the moment, and some of it might be driven by marketing. They'll have done their research and tried to discover what people want. But then also, it's to do with what manual boxes people have to handle the power and torque that modern engines are generating. I drove a Mini GP a couple of weeks ago, and that had an auto simply because BMW doesn't make a box for a transverse engine that can handle 300 pound-feet. So, you know, there'd be a bit of that in the thinking. Are people actually going to buy it, or are people like us just going to talk about buying it but not actually do so? I don't know. I mean, I like them. I love them, a stick shift. But if I was doing proper off-roading now, I'd go with the auto.
Yeah, and it seems
it's arguably less fun.
It seems like because that's the engine option that you want. Now, the 7-speed manual in the smaller, I think the 2.7 and the 2.3, the 2.7 is what, 310 horsepower, 400 pound-feet of torque, only 10-speed transmission. I don't know what the horsepower is on the 2.3, but the 7-speed transmission, to your point, Ford, of course, people are going to say, hey, Ford has plenty of manual transmissions. Especially in the Mustang lineup, they can handle the horsepower. But this 7-speed transmission, the 7th gear is not an overdrive gear, I believe. It is a rock crawler gear. So it's a 6-speed with a rock crawler gear. Am I right about this?
Yeah, that's right. So it's like the inverse of what we used to have as an overdrive in the old days. Yeah, so you have this like little off-roading, which kind of, I suppose, talks to the point I was making about why automatics can make a lot of sense off-road when you try and manage throttle control and letting the electronics work with you rather than hinder you. Yeah, I have the horsepower figures, Matt, just on the 2.3, 270 horsepower for the 2.3, 310 horsepower for the 2.7. So it's not a big jump, but the torque goes up quite significantly. 310 pound-feet for the 2.3, 400 pound-feet for the 2.7. So it's the torque that you really gain from when you go through your engine.
Now, of course, because we're talking about EcoBoost engines, there's turbos there, and they've been out for a while in several other vehicles. You know, we're it's easy to turn up the wick a little bit in either one of these engine configurations between handheld tuners and exhaust and you know, even turbo upgrades. I think you could easily see, you know, 20-30% bumps, no problem, all day long. I imagine that 310 horsepower, I bet if you just bought a tuner for $500 or $600 and even ran a 91 octane tune, I bet you pick up, I would bet you'd pick up 35 to 40 horsepower and about 60 pound feet of torque. Off the top of my head, I'd say 60, maybe in as high as 80. And on a 93 tune, maybe even more on that. So I think your 310 horsepower could be 340 to 380 all day long, depending on the octane and the tune, if you want to get into that, right? And well, Bill, we know you will, because that's the whole point. But now, as far as suspension that you know of, now Ford's presentation was a lot about personalization, and that's what the consumers really love. That's what we love to see. It's cool the way they put this together. The vehicle is almost like Legos. Like, everything is just a few bolts away from swapping. Fender flares and doors are on and off, and roof are on and off, and hoods and grills and all the cool stuff you can bolt on and off, which also makes it so much easier for the aftermarket to say, hey, you want to swap a grill and do something more aggressive or something with more air or something for a different temperature or something in the snow? Like, you can do all of these things. But what's underneath the chassis of the full size 2-door and 4-door? The videos look fantastic. I see some rock crawling, and I see some high speed off road running of those vehicles. But what are your thoughts on it, Alistair?
I think they've been really canny. I think they just looked at the market, recognized how much success Wrangler has with the aftermarket, but also how much money Mopar themselves make out of all the bits. So what they're offering from the outset is, if you go for the Badlands, you get different Bilstein suspension. If you go for the, what's it called? Not the Wildtrak.
There was a Sasquatch, right?
Yeah, there's something Sasquatch, else. There's all sorts of different tires, different things. So Ford's already packaging it up like this, but then of course they're making it. This whole new word, isn't it? Modularity.
Yeah.
And what I really like is, I mean, I've tried to take the roof off a Wrangler and things like that. It's not straightforward. Whereas what they seem to have done here is been really clever with some of the detailing. So the doors come off with one bolt. I mean, we'll wait to see how easy this is in reality. But they're saying it comes off with one bolt, you take the door off, and you can store it in the trunk. Now, that's great, because that means you can drive up the highway with the doors on and keep yourself safe and out of the wind. And then when you go on the trail, you can take the door off and sling it in the trunk. Mm-hmm. If it's as easy as that, fantastic. I also think they've really gone a bit, like we saw this a little bit with the Mackie as well, in the attention to detail on the little, there's these little nuts inside which you can basically use, I believe, an Allen key just to unscrew and then take parts off the vehicle, even like things like the handrails you can take off. And they're actually branded up in the same way that the Ford World War II Jeeps were. Because if you remember back in World War II, Ford actually built what we kind of think of as Willys Jeeps. And in order to identify as a Ford, they actually branded up some of the nuts and bolts, and they've copied that across in the Bronco. And I love the fact that a brand like Ford is now, employing these kind of little tricks and details, the sort of surprise and delight stuff. It's great.
Yeah, in their presentation, they spoke about that, and the only way to pitch it was they literally just said Jeep. It's like, when we did Jeeps, when we did World War II Jeeps, we had an F for Ford stamped on the head of each one of the bolts. So now the Bronco will have Bronco stamped onto the head of all of those bolts. Let's talk a little bit about Bronco Sport. I think we're all sort of glossing over Bronco Sport, but it definitely has the potential to sell a lot. Like, if you're going to go onto the lot and just get yourself a nice four-door compact SUV, steady driving, but you want it to stand out a little bit, I think Bronco Sport is an interesting option. What is the engine in it, and what do we know about it?
So this is basically the Bronco Sport. And you're quite right. It's the Bronco itself that's been getting all the attention. But Bronco Sport just sits on what is an escape chassis. And when you look at the interior, it's much more of a kind of traditional, what we might expect is like a family SUV. So you don't get all the tricks and the toys that you would in the bigger Bronco. But they're doing a similar thing to, I think, what like Honda did with the Passport, where they already had the CR-V and the Pilot. Then they create the Passport as a sort of blend of the two, which is, you know, has reasonable off-road capability and is a bit more fun, but is relatively easy to do because you've already got all the hardware bits from elsewhere. So it'll be interesting to see how they kind of pitch, because you're right, the Escape is fine. You know, it's fine, isn't it?
Yeah,
but it's not our favorite small SUV, and the Bronco is going to have pretty much do the same job, but have so much more personality and interest.
Why release a Bronco Sport at the same time in virtually the same presentation as the full size Bronco? Does it? Why not space that out?
I think they're trying to make the point, it's what we came back to earlier about this idea that they're not launching a car, they're launching a brand. And they're also pushing really hard this kind of like community of online, you know, Bronco people and merchandise and driver training, where you can go to an off-road Bronco school, a bit like Land Rover does with its experience centers. So I think they're trying to say, look, this is not just a car, this is a brand. I mean, if you get that several years ago, Ford owned Jaguar, Land Rover, Aston Martin, Mazda. It goes on and on. And then there was a decision when, you know, they hit difficult times to basically jettison all those other brands. And this is almost a way with Lincoln, with Bronco, with Mustang, with Ford, of trying to go back to that brand strategy, recognizing that, you know, maybe, you know, a slightly more affluent younger audience isn't necessarily going to buy the Blue Oval, but will get excited by a Bronco.
What is going to be the base price of Bronco Sport?
So Bronco Sport's in the mid-20s. Engines, again, this gives you a sense of where they're pitching it. 1.5-litre Eco with 181 horsepower, and then a 2-litre Eco Boost with 245 horsepower. So it's a sort of baby, more mainstream Bronco. It will be fascinating long term to see how the sales settle down, because this will be a nice, fun, everyday car for people, and the bigger Bronco will be a whole different audience about off-road and modifying and spending a load of money. So, you know, it'd be interesting in a couple of years' time to see how the sales land, and also how it affects Escape and things like that.
And, you know, for both of you guys, from what you have seen of the vehicles so far, are there any particular features that are standout you thought were making the most sense or the most attractive? Certainly in the presentation that I watched, excuse me, some of the things that I saw were even small things. I think this accessory bar that's going across the length of the dash that you can remove and add to, and then it's basically a slider, if you will, and you can mount anything you want, right? You can put GoPro cameras, you can put iPhones up there, you can move them all anywhere up and down the dash that you want them to, slide them across the dash back and forth, and by essentially having this accessory bar, of course, immediately every company out in the aftermarket is going to go, hey, you know, we can put lights here, we can put GPS stuff, we can put, you know, your phones and different attachments and speakers and notepads, and like having that accessibility bar up there, I thought was a very simple yet smart accessory. Is there anything that you guys have seen that stood out to you as well?
I haven't jumped into it that you know, that much detail oriented by any stretch. I mean, the Sasquatch package absolutely sticks out in my mind. Anytime you can order a package, you know, straight from the factory and it includes 35s, that's got to be a serious package that they're talking about, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what else the package offers, but you know, it's got me saying Sasquatch 15 times in the last 24 hours. So I guess, you know, their mode of operandi as far as advertising has worked in that respect.
Yeah, and Alistair, your point to the doors being removed easily, they can go in a bag, in separate bags, and go into the back area of the vehicle. And if I heard it correctly in the presentation, to make it easier, you essentially use the bag as the way of removing the door. That's the tool. Like you undo one bolt or whatever it's going to take, but the bag has handles. You can basically wrap the door and then use it as a lift right off of there. So you don't have to put the bag on the ground and take the door off and try to put it in the bag by yourself and then zip it up and whatever. Like you basically just do it all at one shot while it's on there, and then you can throw them in the back. So I thought that was another cool feature.
I have one more actually as well, which I think Land Rover's missed the trick of not having this on the Defender, because it was something that the original Range Rover had back in 1970, I want to say, which is a little valve or a little tap in the floor of the vehicle, which allows you to hose out the interior.
Yeah.
Drain plugs.
Yeah. Drain plugs. That's the expression I was looking for. Yep. Yeah, drain plugs in there. I just think that's so cool. And it's just so practical, particularly, you know, if you've got kids and all the rest of it, then, you know, stuff gets thrown around, just be able to hose it out. And there's something wonderfully kind of utilitarian about getting a hose pipe out and just wiping, you know, washing down the interior. And yeah, I just think that there's so much, you know, I'm really excited to spend proper time with it, because there is so much attention to detail in this vehicle. It's really impressive.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good point as well. They are doing some different materials on the inside, on the seats and stuff. And then, of course, a lot of the switch gear up on the dash for the different modes and stuff are basically rubber-coated or covered buttons. And it does allow you to kind of, I mean, for lack of a better term, hose this thing out. You know, certainly hit it with a little bit of water. You know, I'm sure there's a limitation as to how long you can stand there with the hose blaring onto the gauges, but it does make it a lot easier to clean that thing out and pull a plug in the floor and just let the water drain out and if you need to.
In this day and age, ease of operation means everything. Whether it's a phone, whether it's a car, or whether it's an iPad, it doesn't matter. That's the world that we live in. And when you hearken upon the tradition of what the Bronco had, and you couple that with the ability to put a vehicle out and, you know, make advancements that they've made and still give the consumer something that they can personalize more so than any other vehicle, mm-hmm. and tap into the lineage of it, I think it's a pretty smart way of advertising.
Do you know what the big loser in all of this is GM? I've been getting a lot of chat on social media about, I mean, Blazer was one of the most disappointing vehicles I've driven in the past couple of years. And you just think, you know, Ford, at least on the face of it, seemed to have nailed it with how they pitched this vehicle. And obviously we're yet to drive it. But when you compare the opportunity that Ford's had here with the Bronco and what GM had with Blazer, and just came back with a really lackluster sort of generic SUV, It's fascinating. I mean, Jeep's got to be sitting there thinking, you know, this is a big challenge for us. Land Rover's got to be sitting there thinking, how the hell are we going to charge a premium for Defender when this thing looks so cool and does everything that it does? And then you've got GM sitting there thinking, we've got no skin in the game.
I think it's cool because it sets the stage. You know, the next manufacturer's got to one up them. You know, let's see what they got. You know, so it improves the setting for the consumer at the end of the day. So,
I mean, we're going to do, without giving the game away, we're going to do, we're going to be doing Defender versus Wrangler and 4Runner, and then also probably Land Cruiser as well. And then there's going to be this big elephant in the room. So in a year's time, we can kind of go back and do it again with Bronco. It's going to be a really exciting year.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty. It's interesting for sure, and you're right. To your point about GM, they don't really have much of an off-road competitor. Like on some level, there's a version of Colorado, the truck.
There's the R2. Yeah,
that is playing in that space, but. You know, and also Ford's, I don't know if it was an announcement or just rumor or whatever, but we touched on it a little bit, I think, last week about Ford also possibly bringing Ranger Raptor to the United States now. It wasn't available here. It wasn't planning on being available, but now they're saying possibly in a year it could be available. And the reason why that speculation was interesting is because of all the different variations of Bronco. I believe there's some shared technology or the platform or chassis or something could be with Ranger. And now they're saying, well, if Ranger Raptor is this great kind of high speed off-road, you know, truck like the full size Raptor is, what about, you know, in a year or two from now, a, you know, Bronco Raptor or whatever they're going to call it, you know, some sort of, you know, high speed version.
Sure,
of
they
that.
Already got it.
You know,
yeah, I mean, you know. I think they'll be. I think the performance will be all over this, particularly if when Jeep comes out with a V8 Wrangler, because ultimately Ford wants the money. They don't want to give the money away to all the aftermarket. You know, they need a Mopar equivalent, because as we all know, there's tons of margin in that stuff.
You know, there was a time I spoke to Ford many years ago, and there was a time where somebody was a little hesitant with the aftermarket in the Ford world. They were saying, hey, you know, you buy a Mustang or an F-150, and you buy it in the variations that they offer it, and that's it. And then and Ford Performance Catalog, the parts catalog, you know, always around, always did well, but didn't feel like it was getting quite the support that it could have gotten from the brand. And then there was a little bit of change in staffing over there, and somebody else came into Mustang and Ford Performance and said, hey, we're in the business of selling cars on the Mustang side. So if people want to personalize their car and that helps us sell cars, then we're all for it. So now we're going to support that initiative. And you ended up seeing a lot more parts available and cool stuff being developed in the Ford Performance parts catalog. And now they're sort of embracing two sides of it. Ford Performance is going, yes, we want to make a bunch of parts and make it available, like Broncos dealer accessories and things like that. And the catalog, the aftermarket catalog. But now they're saying, but hey, if you don't buy Ford Performance parts and you want to go buy Magnaflow exhaust and HRE wheels, you still got to buy a vehicle to put it on. And if, as long as that's a Ford, it's all still part of the game, right? All of these car manufacturers should pay attention to that as well. Listen, I know there's some car manufacturers that own several brands, and they don't like it when one brand puts their peanut butter and the other brand's chocolate. And you know what I'm saying? Like, they're all owned by the same company, but but they don't want to mix their peanut butter and chocolate together and make something delicious and sweet. And I don't, and I'm not quite
sure
why.
You make it sound so easy.
Yeah. It's just, you know, yeah. Like, listen, even in your world of testing, you know, does, you know, because we're on the topic of Ford and Dodge, I just don't see a lot of comparisons of Jeep Trackhawk versus, you know, Hellcat, Charger, because I don't think they want those to be drag raced in the same video, right? Because they're trying to position themselves differently.
It's a weird dynamic. It very much is. And I tell you what, it's not on display any better than at SEMA.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have a word.
So
for you,
strange.
Though,
yeah,
I have a word for you that I think talks to a lot of this, which is liability. You know, it's all about, if you're an OEM, then you have to honor the warranty. I actually shot I might have mentioned this before, but before I moved to Edmonds, I shot a documentary on the development of the Focus RS, and I spent 3 years with the development team, went all over the world, the Arctic, States, several times Europe. And it was a fascinating project to see it from the other side of the spectrum, with basically, and Ford Performance is kind of like they almost call themselves they're the Skunk Works operation. They're allowed to break a few more rules, break a few more shortcuts. But those cars still have to conform to Ford standards. And sometimes with things like RS500s and Ford GTs, you can be a little bit fast and loose with the really small number stuff. But a car like the Focus RS, which was selling, I think, 30,000 units globally, they've got to adhere to certain conditions. And then if you start offering aftermarket parts, they do too. So you can't just you know, I mean, it's no secret that they, because we told it in the story, they had problems with that RS engine when they tried to turn the power. I mean, it was actually traced to some parts and supply issues, but it was, and they fixed it in the end. But, you know, if you were starting to really turn up the power and the boost on that without doing all that durability testing, mm-hmm. I mean, just to give you an example, Ford, I mean, this is the Focus RS. So this is a real niche product. They crashed 27 vehicles in order to, they destroyed 27 vehicles in order to deal with crash testing. It's very expensive. Easy to knock the OEMs from this. Yeah, it's very expensive. And if you're going to build an aftermarket part that meets all these criteria and all the legislative stuff as an OEM, it's a tough thing to do. And sometimes, you know, we understandably give them a hard time and say, why can't you just give us a bit bigger supercharger? But, you know, it's a big world out there.
You know, it's interesting when you start to break down the costs of developing a vehicle. I had a conversation with Fisker Automotive years ago when the Fisker Karma electric vehicle came out. And it's a pretty looking sedan. They ran into really bad issues with A123, the battery supplier, and that kind of folded the company. And now we have Karma, and then we have Fisker. We have two companies as a result. But when that car came out, I remember going to interviewing them at like LA Auto Show or something, and I'm looking at this gorgeous four-door sedan, and it's got sort of this
beautiful
solar panel kind of thing going up on the roof, and we're walking through, and I said, hey, just out of curiosity, is it available with a sunroof? And they said, well, no. And I was like, that seems odd for a high-end car. And they said, look, they said, for us to develop the sunroof, we'd have to re-crash all of, you know, the cars, versions of it with the sunroof. It's $5 million minimum. So the R&D cost is at least $5 million just in approvals and government testing, crashing, to do the sunroof. And for them to have a sunroof and a non-sunroof version would be expensive. And they're like, how many sunroofs are we going to sell to justify that cost on a brand new car company that's just getting out the gate with their first car? And so they made a decision. They're like, no sunroof. I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, it was a smart financial decision. I mean, ultimately not, I guess, because the company's gone. But that's what we're talking about. It's like, as soon as you do something, that actually brings up the Jeep as well. Let me hit this ad, and then I want to talk about the Jeep with the 392 Hemi, because there's some thoughts around crash testing and why that engine is there and not another engine, right? Again, from our friends at Dodge, summertime is the best time to join the Brotherhood of Muscle, because Dodge Power Dollars means you get a guaranteed discount. The math is simple. You've heard us talk about it before. You get $10 off based on the total horsepower of your new Dodge vehicle. So every 2020 Challenger, every 2020 Durango, every 2020 Dodge Charger, they all have the discount that applies. You get the most out of your horsepower this summer. And with $10 off for each horsepower, that means you can enjoy the sweet sounds of a Dodge SRT Scat Pack with 485 horsepower, and you'll get $4,850 off. And this summer, Dodge Power Dollars is back on the Dodge Durango. So no matter where the summer takes you, the Dodge Durango is here to make every trip this season a breeze. I love that it's available in the Durango. So if you get more power, you get more off. It's that simple. Hurry into your local Dodge dealer now to take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars. We would love the idea of a supercharged Hellcat engine or Demon engine or something in the Jeep Wrangler. But from what I understand, just, I don't know, maybe the size of the engine, the addition of the supercharger, the reason why this Jeep Wrangler concept that we have is the naturally aspirated engine is they would have to retest and crash a bunch of Jeeps just to get that engine to work, to get the supercharged engine to work. And I don't know if the issue is they're testing the naturally aspirated engine and crashing it, and they would have to do the supercharged engine, or they got a waiver on the naturally aspirated engine. But the issue of why potentially the supercharged engine isn't the plan from the factory is largely because of that cost. Alistair, do you have thoughts on that? Have you heard anything about that?
I don't know why they'd get a pass for one and not the other.
Or maybe they just want to crash one and not another.
Possibly so. It might also just be to do with they might have built one and found out that it doesn't really work in a Wrangler. You know, you're putting a hell of a lot of weight and everything else over the front of the vehicle. It might have just, you know, been understeering to the nearest hedge every time you tried to turn left. So mm-hmm. I remember once driving something called a V10 diesel Volkswagen, which was like that. They put so much weight over the front of the vehicle that basically, even at 20 miles an hour, if you turn left, the thing was just kind of understeering off to the off to the right. So, yeah, it could be a combination of things, or how it could be also load on the transmission. How do you put that much power down through the Wrangler? You know, it comes back to what we were just saying. If you're an aftermarket tuner and you know that your audience is going to give you a pass on most things, you know, it's very different for an OEM offering a 3-year warranty on this as a new car. And if there's so much torque and everything else, it's just going to twist up the transmission and the chassis and everything else on a Wrangler, then, you know, they have to be a little bit sensible. Honestly,
you
I
always
think,
can. Sorry, Bill. Go ahead. I was sorry. Oh, no, finish.
I was. It's very nice to be in a conversation where people let me finish a sentence. I mean, no, not so it doesn't happen at home. I'm only joking. I can't even remember what I was going to say now. No, I was going to say was that a naturally aspirated V8 Jeep sounds like a really nice thing.
Yeah,
and I was going to say that you can always go the route that I am, because as you saw on Instagram, I got the big black beast back, the 99 Ram.
Yeah,
with the 392 crate motor, and I contacted Whipple yesterday, and we're gonna see about supercharging that bad boy. So
yeah,
it obviously has a little bit more weight to the vehicle than one of those Wranglers does. There's no question about it. So it'll be an interesting switch for me.
You're right. It could be a weight issue. It could be a packaging issue. It could certainly be a cost issue. It could be a warranty issue, durability issue. It all starts to add up. So maybe the smart move would be, you're right, the naturally aspirated engine. And of course, the aftermarket's going to do what the aftermarket's going to do. There's going to be superchargers and all sorts of things available for it.
And they could have something down the road to trump it, right? You know, I mean, that's always a possibility. So, I mean, God only knows what's up their sleeve.
The other problem, it may not fit, because I think they've already had to modify the front end to get the V8 in there.
My guess is I was thinking that as well. I think it was probably a clearance issue, and they're probably trying to move that V8 engine as back far as possible into the firewall and where the top of the supercharger may hit. I haven't really seen the images of the engine in that Jeep. You know, and even what's out there, I don't know if it's a photograph or just a rendering that was released by Jeep, but it could be a packaging issue as well. So tough to say, you know, but it seems interesting. Do we know what the estimated horsepower is supposed to be? I don't recall which version of the engine, 425, 470, something along.
It's in the 400s. I can't imagine. I can't remember exactly. It's in the 400s. I want to say around 450, but I wouldn't know without checking exactly.
What is the horsepower of the base Jeep Wrangler now?
The very base one, two.
Or what's their V6?
The twos or the high
yeah.
two?
Yeah, what's, yeah, the, yeah. I wonder what their V6 engine is.
It's going to be similar to Bronco, so high twos. Bronco starts at 270 or 310, so it's going to be, you know, these things all mirror each other.
Yeah, it's going to be, you're right. I would imagine it's going to be very similar. And now, as far as one of the questions that came up from a friend of ours, Steve Austin sent me a text, and it's like, hey, Bronco looks good. Would I fit in it? And Alistair, being one of the few who have seen it, your team has done a film on it. What is the size of the Bronco two-door, four-door? We know the Bronco Sport is the size of Escape, and Escape, we already know, is tiny. What do you think is going to be, like, what kind of room is on the inside? I'm not talking about with the doors off, but is the broad shoulder buddy up there going to fit in it?
It's a pretty wide vehicle. You know, what's interesting about it is that, unlike the Jeep, my understanding is they're not going to try and sell it in Europe. And that's often part of the balance, that Europe can't cope with bigger, wider cars. So they've really developed this vehicle for the US. So
it's interesting.
Again, I'm 6'4". I haven't sat in it, but I don't have anything. You know, my shoulders are half the width. But but I think they're going to build. They build this for the US market, so I expect it to be pretty spacious. So without, I mean, the Jeeps. If you get tall, the Jeep is reasonably tight, just because you don't get a massive amount of driving seat travel. But I would imagine it'd fit, because this is a US car.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. That's good to know. All right, guys, we're going to wrap things up. Is there anything else that we're missing? Any notes to close on? What else is going on over at Edmunds? Obviously, there's a lot more things that are coming out right now. There was a big announcement last night as we're recording this from Nissan. So I'm sure there's going to be stuff coming out with that. Nissan, by the way, new logo, new car, new EV, you know, sort of a slimmed down, more focused company, I guess.
I'm literally leaving now to bolt to a private airport to film. We've got a new Rogue in the hangar, so we've just I'm about to go and film a piece on the new Rogue, which looks a hell of a lot more interesting than the old Rogue. That's a kind of CRV RAV4 rival. Mm-hmm. You're right. I mean, everything's starting to happen now. It's going to be a super busy NDI. I was just plotting out our video schedule for the rest of the year. And you know, Defender's about to hit next month. So we've got, you know, Wranglers and stuff lined up against that. F-150 will be the end of the year.
Yeah.
Mackie will be the end of the year. You know, there's a lot of Ford stuff, a lot of Jeep stuff in our calendar right now. And, you know, really exciting end of the year. So you've got a whole new chance to abuse me.
Well, we're going to have you
go unnoticed.
We're going to have you keep coming back. All right. Listen, Alistair, always a pleasure when you're on the show. We're going to have to touch base again soon. Guys, follow Alistair Weaver. He's on Twitter. He's Alistair Weaver on Twitter. He's Weaver on Cars on Instagram. That's the new fancy handle that he's got going on over there. Check out Edmunds. Go to edmunds.com/roadnoise. That's where all the hot news is and the latest videos. And then, of course, Edmunds has all the great research and stuff that you're looking for all of these vehicles. You can follow me at Motorator on all social media, Goldberg and Goldberg Garage on Twitter, Goldberg95, Goldberg's Garage on Instagram. You can see pictures of the fancy new garage. I love that. The video from Metron. You can see the completely Rhino Line or Line X 99 Dodge that you just got back. We talked about this long ago. A Graveyard Cars was working on it, and now that you got it back, you're like, great, it's home. Let's supercharge it. So there's no.
All I got to do is find the title. All I got to do is find the title, and I can tag it, and I can drive the damn. Well, so I've waited 2.5 years for it. Now I can't drive the freaking car.
Well, in the meantime, you've got 200 acres of your private land or whatever the hell you got out there. You can just tool it around on your own property, right? You don't
this
need a license plate for
that. Scares the hell out of every one of these animals, man. I can't do it. So I just like, it sucks. I need a silencer on it.
Yeah, right?
So I watched the rendering.
Yeah,
the rendering of that garage, and had like a massive man crush on that garage.
Yeah, yeah. I can't wait to get out there and visit it. It's going to be fantastic. All right, guys.
Thank you guys. I can't wait to see it.
Right? Yeah. What did they give you a time frame now? They're like, oh, now that we got pen to paper, we'll see you in 4 years, or are they going to get this done quick?
Quit asking me, man. Just stop asking.
They have
me.
No idea. Yeah, they don't know.
Everything pushed now. It's snow.
All right, guys.
Maybe on next week's episode.
All right. Oh, next week, I think we've got Speedcore calling on. We got David Salvaggio maybe coming in. Just give us
cool.
a little
we
update.
We can get an update on the Charger.
Yeah, you know, and we touched on their partnership with Classic Recreations, doing a full carbon fiber 67
awesome.
Mustangs that they're going to be doing turnkey from Classic.
They got some new stuff
for their
vet and everything.
Yeah, C8 Corvette carbon fiber bits as well. Yeah,
oh,
that's nice.
That's one of the news. C8 Corvette. Our C8 Corvette is being built literally right now. Rolls off the production line today.
I haven't driven one of these. You got to get it. You got to come over. We've got to go for a ride. I don't know when they're going to be the press schedule with these cars, but everybody's asking, how do you like it? How do you like it? And I said, I don't know. As soon as Alistair gets one, we'll tell you. We'll tell you how we like it, and we'll definitely have to talk about that. All right, guys, thank you so much. And until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening. Always a pleasure when we have Alistair on the show, and be sure to check out what he's got going on. And just a reminder, right now, the Geico is offering an extra 15% on credit, a 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? You could be saving money. Just go to Geico. There's never been a better time to switch. If you want to save an extra 15%, switch by October 7th. No problem. Visit geico.com to learn more. That's geico.com.